welcome to the Well and Well podcast. I'm your host, Susie Clark, and I am a corporate dropout turned coach and mentor for aspiring entrepreneurs. This podcast is all about sharing stories from inspirational guests who basically chose the unconventional route in life and achieved success on their own terms. So a lot of my guests tended to start out in what society would call a conventional route, so say perhaps a corporate job, or they went to uni and got a degree, but at some point they really realised that what they were doing just wasn't for them, and they decided to take a risk, start their own business, and completely change direction and achieve their own version of success. And by sharing their stories, I just want to show you that success is possible for any passion that you have. And if you have a different dream to the one that you're living now, that's absolutely okay. And it's just never too late to change direction. So this week we have Nirali on. She is the co-founder of a healthy snacks brand called Superfoodio. And the conversation is so interesting because actually her story is amazing. She decided to take voluntary redundancy at her corporate job at Vodafone to go and travel around South America with her husband. And it was there that they came across all these incredible superfoods being used and farmers kind of living off the land. And they were so inspired by that, that they kind of started brainstorming ideas on how they could bring this amazing kind of superfood thing back to the UK. And eventually they created Superfoodio. And we chat all about kind of that process that they went through, how they kind of started up the business, and also getting Selfridges as their first stockist, which is just incredible. But basically, yeah, we chat all about that, and she gives some amazing tips for any aspiring entrepreneurs, particularly in the product-based space as well. So if any of you are out there wanting to start a business in the product industry over kind of the services industry, this episode is really, really helpful for you. And I just think that there's so much wisdom in what she talks about in terms of taking yourself out of your environment, out of the daily grind, and going traveling with an open mind and the opportunities that can be born out of that. And it's just really interesting to hear how much of an impact that had on them both becoming entrepreneurs. And she also chats a little bit about running a business as a husband and wife duo, which I found really interesting too. But thanks for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to not miss any future episodes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Nirali. Welcome to the Well and Well podcast. Thank you so much for coming. It would be great to start with a brief introduction to yourself and maybe a little bit about Superfoodio as well, and then we'll dive into a bit more about your story.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. So my name's Nirali. I'm one of the co-founders of Superfoodio. And we're a healthy snacks, plant-based snacks business that was started in the UK about 3 years ago.
Amazing. And I know from our initial chat on the phone that your background is in the corporate world, and you started out at a company that ultimately got acquired by Vodafone. So it'd be really useful to understand what initially led you into the corporate world, because people that I speak to on here, we've got all different types of people, entrepreneurs, yoga teachers, sports people, but most of them started out in the corporate world, and there's always a kind of different reason for that. So I'm really interested into your reason on how you ended up in corporate world.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it was something that was I always thought was the conventional path. Mm-hmm. So I did my degree was psychology, and as part of my degree, I had a 1 year's placement year. So in my third year, I had the opportunity to go and find some work, and I found work within HR, which was related mm-hmm. to sort of business psychology and people, I guess, and that side of psychology. So it took a while for me to find that role. So I guess when I left university, it kind of felt like, you know, I should grab the first opportunity that I could find. And I continued down that sort of career or corporate path, I guess. At first, I guess I started in roles that maybe were stepping stones to what to move towards what I really wanted to do. And I, in that time, I did find a couple of roles that I enjoyed. But I guess that's my main sort of reason. I don't think it was ever planned or thought through. It was just something that, okay, finish your degree and then you just sort of find a job, and it just happened to be that that was the path that I kind of went down.
Yeah, and did you at that time, did you have in your head a thought about what you actually wanted to do, and you were working up to that when you say that you were taking some steps to get there, or was that kind of, you weren't sure and you were kind of browsing, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to do something related to my degree, like related to psychology. And when I started with the placement year, I had the opportunity to move around different teams within HR, so recruitment, maybe some of the admin side, all the rest. And there were a couple of bits that I enjoyed. So I kind of felt that if I took a role, then maybe I could move into a team sort of within like an internal transfer. But I don't think I had a set plan of exactly what I wanted to do. It was just, I guess, trying to find a role that I really enjoyed, and something where I could apply what I'd learnt or kind of use my skill set.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I did a placement as well, and I think the placement years are really good to give you a bit of a taste of what corporate life is like, but equally, because you have to do them as part of your course, sometimes it presents quite like a narrow option to you in terms of what you should do, and like starting a business or entrepreneurship or something like that doesn't really cross your mind because of the placement year and having to do that. So I see it like a positive and slightly a negative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I think it opens up doors and increases employment, for example, like for when you actually leave and finish your degree.
But
it did feel like you wouldn't be able to find a placement in any kind of profession. It sort of does, it is more the corporates that kind of take students on and all the rest. So that's what I guess most people end up doing.
It narrows the field a little bit, and then you get used to the money and the lifestyle, and you're like, oh, I'll take a grad scheme.
Yeah.
But okay, so then after that initial kind of entry period then, can you talk a little bit about the next stage? So being immersed in corporate life, the company being taken over by Vodafone, like, did you enjoy your job at the time? What did you like and what did you not necessarily like?
So I, before we were, the company was bought by Vodafone, I used to work in the learning and development team.
Okay.
And that was one of the roles that I really enjoyed because I could apply a lot of my psychology. There was a lot that I could learn in the job and kind of upskill. And I think what I enjoyed about working in that sort of corporate environment was the team that I had. So I felt like, looking back, I feel like it, having the right team, the right support, the right manager, all of those things, if you have all of those, then, you know, it can be really enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as there was a little bit of a shake up because we were bought out, and then you're sort of, the team gets split up, you've got a new manager or new responsibilities, you can kind of end up in a role that maybe is more for the organisation or more for the sake of you having a job as opposed to something that you really want to do. So yeah, I guess some of the things I didn't like looking back now, and if I compare to what like having my own like snacks business, I think it's, there was less sort of ownership and less accountability. It was sort of you're kind of doing and being led by the company's vision, and if that doesn't align with what you believe in, then there's not as much sort of passion in what you're doing, and you don't kind of give 110%, whereas at the moment I feel like I do.
Yeah, that triggers me actually. When I was in my first finance job, I had a stage when I was in a team that I absolutely loved, had an amazing manager, and it was just like, it felt like the time of my life at the time. But then the company makes a change and you get a new manager, and then it can change dramatically at that point. And you can have a completely different experience even though your role is the same. And I think, like, listening to what you're saying, sometimes it's a bit about the control. So when you have your own business, you have control over decisions like that, and if you think like a team is working, then you can keep it there, whereas if you're working for a big corporate, there's so much that's out of your hands, and they can make changes that affect you really drastically like that.
Okay,
so let's chat a little bit around the phase of so the company got taken over by Vodafone, right? So let's maybe talk about that phase and how you felt around that and your decision process to ultimately leaving.
Yeah, so I guess there was a lot of change at that time and a lot of uncertainty. And I kind of decided that maybe it was time to leave because it was more from a logistical point of view in the fact that like Vodafone's head offices were... ended up being almost like a 2-hour commute from where I was based to where I was living. So, and that's one way. So I was just like, actually, I don't really need to be doing this anymore. And I had moved closer to London. So I was like, oh, maybe it's time for a change, like to look for something a bit more local. Like I had good access to transport and all the rest. So I'd made that decision a bit earlier on. But I was open to kind of having roles within the business, maybe to keep me going for a little while. So I ended up actually staying on for a year after I said I'll take a redundancy with all the organisational changes.
Were you driving to...
No, so actually they've got offices in London as well. So in that way it kind of ticked the box of me not having to travel because I said, oh, I'm not really going to do the 2-hour thing, but if there's anything a bit closer, I'll take that. So they did find a role for me in I think it was in Paddington, which worked well, but I think eventually it wasn't really the role that I wanted to do, and it was in my head it was always going to be short term, not something that I'd kind of spend too much time doing.
But I guess a useful phase for you to kind of figure out, right, okay, this is an opportunity to make a decision to go one way or another here, and it gave you a bit of time to figure out exactly what it was that you wanted to do.
Exactly, and I think sometimes you have to do things that you and realize that you don't like them, because then it kind of forces you or gets you to question what you're doing, and then you make a change. Whereas if you don't experience that, then you've got less clarity of what it is that you really want to do.
I agree with you. Sometimes you just need that time to kind of reflect on things, understand how you're reacting to stuff, and then sometimes the solution just comes to you over a bit of time.
Sense. And it, for me, it was sort of like, well, I know definitely don't want to continue doing this, so I'm going to find something else or find something I do enjoy.
Okay, and then, so how did you come to the decision of travelling South America, which is so exciting and I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But how, how did you, like, come across that as your ultimate solution at that point?
Yeah, well, I guess in terms of, it was me and my husband that went travelling to South America, and he always wanted to do the Inca Trail in Peru, so... It was one of the places and one of the continents actually that neither of us had been to, so it kind of made sense that if we were to invest like a longer period of time doing something, that South America would be a good place to go. So I think it was more him that chose the place, but for me, I'd kind of, through Vodafone and the previous company, I'd kind of been there for about 5 years in total. And I remember when I initially joined, I was like, oh, I'll just do this for 6 months until I find my next role, and it continued for 5 years. So I knew that if I didn't stop then and maybe do something else, I'd probably step into another role, and then another 5 years would go
so
by.
Easy to happen.
So
like that.
I just kind of felt like, actually, before I commit myself to something else, and we both wanted to go traveling, like, why not just take season off? There was no reason for us not to do it at that point, so let's just do it, really.
So was it something that was always on the cards that you always chatted about, or was it something that at that point when you were just at a natural phase to do something different that your husband was as well, and that just came about as an idea?
I think we'd always said we'd love to travel. And it was just, we'd never sort of said like, oh, actually, why don't we do it at this time? And then when sort of the job changes and things came about, it was like, actually, this is the perfect time when you, there's not too many other commitments. Like if you're already leaving your job, that's already one big commitment that you're kind of moving away from. So maybe that's, this is a great time to do it. So then we just started planning, and
that's so exciting.
I think it took a while to kind of get all the plans and things in place, but it was worth it.
I was gonna say, what's the Inca Trail like? I'd love to hear more about that. There might be some listeners as well who have thought about doing it, but they don't really know what's involved.
I think it's it's a really good trail. Like it's beautiful. Like you just see so much of the landscape. But I think, and it, For me, I always thought like obviously it would be a physical challenge.
Yeah, is it quite hardcore trekking?
It can be. And I think with the altitude, it makes it harder. So I remember at times thinking like, oh, I swear I trained for this. I swear I can walk up this many steps. But then with the altitude, it just makes it so much harder.
And yeah.
Even like altitude plus carrying a backpack, like suddenly there's a few things against you. But one of the things I found was... the biggest challenge is also mental challenge, like actually thinking that you can do it and that feeling of accomplishing something when you get to the end. So yeah, it was just so much more than just kind of training for the Inca Trail and then doing the Inca Trail. I felt like there was a lot, and I guess you go with a group, so you build a little bit of a community and you're helping each other out and all the rest. So yeah, it was just such a good experience. Yeah, and then at the end you're just like, oh, I can't believe I just did that. Like, even sleeping, like your sleeping arrangements are intense overnight.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. So you have to take the tent with you.
Well, you've got Sherpas who kind of carry for you, so they set everything up.
Yeah.
But it's just living in a different environment to, I guess, what you're used to, like no showers, all the rest. So
after like working out all day.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was a really good experience. So.
Yeah, and how big was the group that you
went
with?
I think ours was, I want to say, probably close to 10. So we had 10, we had like two guides, like one that stays at this, with people at the front of the group and then one at the back of the group.
Yeah.
And then you've got like allocated Sherpas who kind of carry everything for you. So when you get to your final spot, they've set up the tents and even like a big food tent and made the food and everything. So yeah, it was quite nice.
And how many days or how many nights is it?
So it's 4 days.
Right,
I think the last day is when you kind of get to the final destination. And then you're at Machu Picchu where the sort of the ruins are, and then you can get the train back down, which is so short. You're like, I just did four days like trekking and now I'm back to square one in half an hour.
I bet it was beautiful though. I bet, like, it's definitely something I'd love to do in my lifetime.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's chat a bit more about the other parts of South America that you visited, and also how you got exposed to the superfoods as well.
Yeah, so I guess when we first were planning, so both of us follow like a plant-based diet. And we've always been vegetarian like our whole life. So one of our first thoughts was like, oh, what's it going to be like in terms of getting food out there? So I guess when you go away for a couple of weeks, it's fine. Like you can live off pizzas and pastas if you had to. But for 4 months, it feels a bit sort of like, it's not something that you want to do. So I guess we were a little bit apprehensive. Our first stop was Argentina, which is like steak country. So it was kind of like, oh, the food's not really, I don't know what's going to happen. And also being away for that length of time, like in an unfamiliar place, like, you know, there's a few sort of things that you kind of maybe are a bit apprehensive of. But when we actually got out there, and I think by the virtue of traveling for so long, we actually got to immerse with the local culture and do things like homestays and really understand, you know, what people, how they live, like they live so sustainably and live off the earth. And with us being vegetarian, you know, they were always so accommodating. And
really,
I remember like every time we say we're vegetarian, they're like, oh yeah, we've got like quinoa for you. Like, and we ended up having quinoa for like breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, like in so many different forms. And we're just like, oh, we'd never be exposed to this back home. And that was such an eye-opener for us, even like learning about, so the quinoa was more in sort of Bolivia and Peru, and in Brazil, like the acai berry. So I know here in the UK, like acai bowls have become a bigger thing now, but then I'd never even heard of it. And we were in Brazil in February and it was so hot. And they were like, oh yeah, this is like the perfect thing. Like it hydrates you, it fills you up. Like you don't, you know, for this type of Brazilian heat, this is what you need to have. It's got the antioxidants, all the rest. And we were just like, there's so much food out here, like even cacao that we'd never really been exposed to, or understood like how it grows, where it grows, you know, how to farm it, all the rest. And that is one of the biggest things that we sort of learned as we were traveling around. And I guess from going to being apprehensive about food to learning so much, and being really, really surprised, I guess, with everything that we learn.
It was almost loving it in the end.
Yeah, exactly. It just kind of reversed in that sense.
Oh no, that's really exciting. And I guess back then, how many years ago was that? Like
about 5 years.
5 years. Yeah. So back then, I mean, quinoa and things like that, it's everywhere now in England, but back then I imagine wasn't at all, and we didn't really have
that. And I remember
that.
Hearing about quinoa, but it was like you'd see the pack on maybe a Waitrose shelf or something, but not really knowing what to do with it. You wouldn't pick it up and you just think, oh, it's an alternative to couscous. So, you know, there was no real reason to experiment with it. And with it being so high in protein, it's actually perfect for vegetarian, a plant-based diet. So it was just like, actually, when you really look into certain foods, there's so much more you can do with it. And that was one of the best learnings through the trip, when it comes to sort of food and the culture and the way that they live.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so how was Argentina in the end, given that I would expect it to be really difficult as well, because I'm pescatarian, but I would expect it to be really difficult
there. That was our sort of impression. But I think we just did like a little bit of research and made sure we actually found like some vegan restaurants out there that did some amazing food.
Really?
So again, that was it was just such an eye-opener. I mean, we did in Argentina, we traveled to the Patagonia region, so it's a bit more remote out there, but it wasn't that you couldn't find food. And I think it was one of the regions there that where we found like a vegan restaurant, and we were like, oh, this is quite cool. Like when you actually dig a bit deeper, there is more to it and there is food available. So
sounds like it was almost a bit more creative than it was here, to be
honest. Absolutely. They're so ahead of what we would experience here.
Okay, so at what point then did you take this kind of observation and like this excitement about all these amazing foods to a potential business idea?
So I guess because we learned so much, and it was just like, oh, we can't wait to go back home and share this with our friends and our family. And it was on like a bus journey from Bolivia to Peru, which was like 17 hours, and we were just like, oh, I wonder, like, wouldn't it be cool?
Hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whoa.
I know. So you kind of need something to do.
That's true.
So
start a business idea.
Exactly. Like, let's just start version one of what ended up, I guess, being a business plan, and we wanted to just share our learnings and make the discoveries that we came across in South America really fun for people back at home. So I guess coming from a corporate environment where, you know, I know for me personally, I kind of experienced that I'd be hungry around 3 o'clock. Like sometimes I'd be working in an area where there wasn't much food available. So you've got the vending machine and that's about it.
if
you
so
haven't
true.
Brought your own food in. So it was just that let's think of a creative way to share our discoveries from South America. And bring it back to Londoners who are also really interested in food and eating like healthily and all the rest. And that's where we kind of came up with the idea of doing like a online gifting service where we could curate different foods. I don't think at that stage when we were in South America we had planned exactly what that would look like, but I think that's where the seed was planted. And, you know, we were just sort of thinking of like, oh, who's our target audience? Who would be our target audience? Or, you know, why would they buy from us? Like that kind of stuff on this bus journey. We were like, oh, let's just like talk through some of these ideas. Because it just felt really cool to like start a business. It was like, oh, can you imagine if we really did this kind of thing?
I love that. I feel as well that the fact that you were away and traveling, do you think it kind of opened your mind a little bit more to those that as an option, whereas if you were still in England perhaps, would you maybe have been so open-minded to a business idea?
I think absolutely, like the traveling was 100% the reason, and I just remember feeling like it just opens your mind so much more, like suddenly you're not in your daily grind, I guess, and you've got the headspace to think outside. And I think like it's even like if you're working on a project or something and you go for a walk to clear your mind, it's that kind of headspace. But imagine doing that for 4 months and suddenly you can get really creative and I guess feel a bit more empowered that you can do anything really.
And there's something about visiting a country that's not so developed, I feel, from my experience, that you see how creative they are with things. And I guess maybe it's different. Maybe it's because it's London and we're in London, but sometimes in London everything just seems so routine and so like, and you can kind of avoid the whole creativity thing. Perhaps like being in some of these other countries really does stimulate that kind of
creative side of you. Yeah, and you can get inspiration. Yeah, exactly. You can get inspiration from the way that they're living and, you know, the foods that they're eating and all the rest. And I don't know how, unless you're naturally creative, I don't know how creative you can get in that routine, like you said. You don't really stop to think differently, I guess.
Yeah, and it's almost like unlocking that creative door as well, I find. Like, I wasn't in a particularly creative role, and I feel like since starting a business, I've had to really try and open that door. I know it's in there somewhere. Okay, so just to give context then, like what position was your husband in? Had he quit his job at that point in terms of like starting a business?
He was contracting. Yeah. So when I stopped, it was his contract was coming to an end as and then when we came back, like I still remember the conversation of he was saying like, oh, you know, he could pick up another contract, and had spoken to his manager about perhaps going back after we came back from South America. And I remember saying to him like, oh, you know, what should I do? Like, you know, maybe I can go back to work and do this part time. Like, it'd be cool to explore everything that we've just been talking to, but maybe I'll get another job and do it on the side. And I remember him saying like, if you do that, it'll never take off. And I know why I was saying it. I was saying it from a security point of view, because I'd never been in that situation where I didn't have a corporate role, and I was like, oh, how do you, what happens then? Like, and I just thought like, okay, maybe if I've got this opportunity, I can kind of take this time to really flesh out what we're thinking, and then just see how it goes.
Yeah. And do you think that he was right in the sense that if you did get a job and tried to do it part-time, it would be a lot more difficult? Because sometimes I actually tried to do the side hustle thing and it didn't work for me. I just had to like save some money to support myself and just cut it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do think like side hustles are great, but if you really do want to run a business, then at some point you do just have to get the guts kind of to cut just the cord. Go 100%.
No, absolutely. And I think because there were two of us doing it in that way, I guess with Jag going back to work, it meant that was sort of where we could save. But eventually he ended up going from full-time contracting to part-time contracting to coming on to super. So in the same way, he ended up sort of, we both kind of felt like actually it's going to need more than one person. So he kind of committed to the business full-time as well. Mm-hmm. Eventually he followed the same path because we both felt that if we really wanted to give it a go and give it our all, then we should fully commit to it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like quite a kind of perfect transition in a way, having those options. So you came back to London, and what did you first do? Because obviously at this point it was an idea, you'd learned so much about it all, you've got this enthusiasm for it. What were the first things that you did? And I think it's really interesting to kind of focus on this, because I think this is where a lot of people who have an idea just never do it, because they don't know what to do first, or they don't take that initial risk. So I'm really interested in what you actually did as the first few steps.
So when we were actually in so the wedding I mentioned in South India, we'd actually mentioned to a few friends who were sort of like, oh, what are you going to do when you go back? And we were like, yeah, we're going to start a business. And it felt like now we've just committed to it by saying it out loud. But actually talking with them, we had a friend who introduced us to her dad, who's in the business world. So one of the first things we actually did was meet up with him to try and understand the world. So neither of us had a business background. And I think it was important to kind of maybe understand what we needed to do or how we should be thinking. And I don't think we had the answers, you know, at that time, but just, you know, starting to talk to people and understand, you know, what it actually takes. And then also kind of doing a lot of market research in the area, you know, in terms of what we wanted to do. So was there anyone else doing what we were doing, or what would be our sort of USP, I guess? And that took a while, and I don't think it ever stops. Like, you always continue to look at what's going on in the market, speak to people. But that was one of the first things that we started doing, and we got to a point where we sort of thought like, actually we need to really get out there. So I think we booked like our first show and it sort of gave us a deadline, like actually we need to launch on the States and now we need a website, we need our final product, we need to think about like branding and all the rest. And that was quite good to kind of give us a time scale to work to as well.
Yeah, and how did you go about actually creating the product?
So at that time we started as a like the online gifting box. So what we were doing was working with other brands and curating. So what we wanted to do was introduce their products to a consumer base who were interested in healthy eating but maybe didn't have access to it. And the brands weren't sort of in your local Sainsbury's or any sort of high street stores. So it was a two-way thing. Consumers would find these new exciting brands that, you know, would meet the kind of health criteria, refined sugar-free, all the rest. And the brands could reach a consumer base who could maybe discover their new favourite snack.
Yeah.
So that's how we sort of started. And it was just by contacting people or seeing what's out there again when we initially started and just started building those relationships. And
so was it a bit of like a subscription based model?
Yeah, so people had the option to subscribe or they could buy like one-off gift boxes. So we did that for a little while, and I think by the virtue of that, that's what kind of got us, I guess we really did understand the market by working with a lot of other people and seeing where the gaps were.
Yeah, because you would have seen all the brands that were out there.
I don't think we even realised that we were getting that insight until we sort of stopped and thought, actually, you know, we're always looking for example, we were always looking for one savoury thing to put in our box because we didn't want it to all be like date-based or sugar-based. And that's where we were like, God, it's really hard to find something like that. So, you know, a couple of our products are savoury, like kind of providing a savoury, healthy snack. So that kind of informed the decisions to, you know, this type of snacks that we are kind of range at the moment.
Nice. So at what point did you then decide, right, actually, we're going to create our own range?
So I guess we were just, when we started seeing those gaps, we started experimenting in the kitchen and just coming up with different recipes and all the rest. And that's where, again, we booked another trade show. We were like, we need to get out there. And I guess we were, with our boxes, we were sort of dealing with consumers or customers directly, whereas this was maybe a bit more on the retail side. So we booked a trade show this time, and it kind of gave us a deadline that we needed to get something presentable to kind of have at this show. And yeah, it just took like months of kind of iterations in the kitchen to try and get a recipe. But I think one of the most important things was to get out there, because that's when we got the feedback, got to understand, like, you know, what, which flavour people are enjoying, which flavours maybe aren't working so well or we needed to work on and tweak. And that was our sort of plan at that stage.
I love that you kind of were setting yourself these deadlines in a way to kind of keep that accountability there. I think that's really inspiring. Okay, so let's chat a little bit more about, I'm really intrigued about this, your experience of running a business as a husband and wife couple, because I feel like that if that works, it's amazing, but I imagine it has its own kind of interesting things about it.
We get asked this question. I think for us it works really well. And I think, like, if I really kind of analyze why it works so well, I think it's because we both have the same values and mission of what we'd like to do. So we both always had an interest in kind of health and wellness, like eating well, creating sort of healthy alternatives to foods that, you know, maybe are a bit more accessible in the market. And that's sort of our mission, to create something that is healthy but tastes good, and you sort of get the best of both worlds. You don't have to compromise on one. If you want to be healthy, you don't have to compromise on taste. And so that's always been like our underlying values. And I think that's the reason why it works so well. And then we both have our own individual strengths. So in that way, it kind of complements each other. But I guess maybe being husband and wife, we know each other so well that you kind of know when someone's having a bad day, or, you know, how they work well, or what they maybe need to hear to kind of get motivated again. And I think in that way, it's just sort of clicked in that way.
So did you kind of like divide the role? Like, do you have your own kind of parts of the business that you look after, if you know what I mean? Like, depending on your strengths and stuff.
So I guess because I started on the business myself mainly, and Jag was sort of working. So he, we'd still do things when he got back from work, like when he'd get back at five. He sort of used to say that, you know, he had a 9 to 5 and then a 5 to 9, which is a business. So but I guess I was doing a lot of the daily things, like, you know, in terms of email correspondence and the finance side and all the rest. And I guess I've just continued in that because I already understood that world. So we do, we have sort of divided up bits, but I think we also, if we needed to, we can pick up each other's role or conversations if one of us isn't available, which I think is quite handy as well, to be able to step in and make sure that we both completely understand the business and what's going on. So if we need to, we can kind of pick up each other's roles or conversations.
Yeah. And do you have any advice for anyone out there who might be thinking about starting a business with their partner?
Yeah, I think it's, I think the values thing is the main thing. So I guess thinking about why you're starting the business, is it because you both believe in the mission of the business, or is it for the sake of starting a business, or do you have certain skill sets that you can bring to the business? I guess it's just looking at, you know, and I think that's the same with any business partner. Those are probably the same qualities you'd look for. Yeah, I guess kind of digging deep into that.
My main thing that I would be nervous about would be talking about the business all the time. But then in a way, like, when you're an entrepreneur, that is your passion, that is your life. Sometimes I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but is that a challenge sometimes, like switching off from the business? Maybe you want a bit of a break and he wants to talk about it, or the other way around.
I think it can sort of creep, well, it does creep into your personal life, but I think and we always used to say, like, with food, it's so hard, because even if you're like, okay, we're going to take a break, we're going to go for dinner, and obviously you get served and you're like, oh, I wonder how they made that.
That's so
I wonder where this ingredient is from.
Let's go for the quinoa.
Exactly. So it is quite hard to switch off. But like you said, I think it becomes, because it's your passion, it's always going to be a topic of conversation. And maybe you can say, oh, let's not talk about clients, for example. But I guess you're always thinking of inspiration, or you're picking up things everywhere you go. So in that way, it can be quite hard to switch off.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I do think that if you run your own business and you love it, there's no harm in talking about it, you know?
That's right.
I think where this, oh, let's not talk about work thing comes from my experience, is when you don't like your job.
That's true, actually.
Maybe it's healthy anyway.
And I think, I know a lot of business owners say that if they're starting it by themselves, it can be quite a lonely process. So in that way, having someone that you can say, oh, I was thinking, like, you know, what about this, what about that? You're always like bouncing ideas off each other, and that's what's going to help you grow as a business as well. So I guess it's not a bad thing in that way.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because obviously, well, I've started mine on my own, and sometimes when I had my business coach, she was great to bounce ideas off, but at the moment I haven't got her anymore. So it's that sometimes I just want to talk to someone about something, but then at the same time, if it's a friend or something like that, you're just like, oh, they just don't want to hear about this.
Yeah, I guess no one understands much as the other person, like a partner in the business.
That's an interesting perspective. Okay, so let's chat a little bit more about scaling the business. So getting your first retailer.
Yeah, so actually, so the trade show that I mentioned, we booked this trade show and we were like, okay, we need to get some packaging, we need to get the recipes right, and let's just get out there. It's a perfect opportunity to meet lots of retailers, and even just people in general trying our snacks, like get as much feedback as possible. So we'd booked that, and we met so many people, and we really got to understand I guess what people are looking for, because that was our first exposure to the retail world. And in that show, actually, we met two really interesting people, which we feel like really kind of boosted us. So one was the Selfridges buyer. So we'd met at the show. Yeah, absolutely. And they were just like, oh, you know, we really like what you're doing. Like, we've got this health campaign coming up. Like, why don't you come in and pitch to us a bit more about what the product would look like? Which was amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and that opportunity, like, yeah, thinking back now, like, that doesn't really happen every day. And when we did go in and pitch to Selfridges, like, they really loved what we were doing and placed the first order, like, in that meeting.
Wow.
Which is amazing to be part of that journey with them.
How did that feel?
Yeah, it was just amazing. I remember walking out thinking, did this really just happen? And also being in Selfridges, like, the feedback that we got on our products, like, we used every step and every stage of feedback to improve our product,
right.
So improve our packaging and, you know, what people wanted to read and all the rest. And that was the beauty of us doing it ourselves, like being there, being on the shop floor. So that was great to kind of get that first stepping stone. And from, by having Selfridges on, you know, by saying that you're stock there, it kind of attracts a lot of other retailers. So we were speaking to Planet Organic and Whole Foods, and it just, from there, it just sort of helped us gain that traction. And then also at the same show, we so the show was held at the XL Centre, and we, as part of our, you know, when we were talking to people, we met a couple that sort of said, oh, you know, we're going to come back later because we think there's someone who will really enjoy your snacks. And we thought, we weren't really sure who it was. It was like, maybe it's the Harrods buyer this time.
Hopefully.
I don't know. Exactly. But at the end of the day, they came back, and they'd come back with Novak Djokovic.
No way.
Yeah, so he was playing at the Barclays Open, I think it was, which was like right next to the XL.
I would have been fangirling
And it was just like, we just didn't know, well, we just didn't expect that. And but we just had to kind of
at
act
the
normal.
Show as well.
And
because
he follows like a plant-based diet, like dairy-free, gluten-free and refined sugar-free. And so, you know, the people that were with him would kind of spotted our brand as one that would meet those requirements. So we got to meet him, and he tried our snacks and gave us like really good feedback, and you know, took away some of the snacks as well. So we're kind of like, that's just really random that we met our first retailer at the show and almost our first customer kind of thing. Which was just amazing to kind of get that. You just, it just gives you a boost. Like at the end, we were like, oh God, if there's nothing else, we've just had Novak Djokovic try our snacks.
So, what was he like?
Yeah, he was really, really sweet. And really like, you know, asking about, oh, what protein do you use in here? And, you know, what are the ingredients? And it was a really nice conversation. So yeah, it was a great show, I guess you could say.
That's amazing that they like brought him over and were like, someone that's really interested.
And I think he couldn't try a lot of the foods because they had like dairy and all the rest. So in that way, it was just like the perfect fit.
Oh, how random, but really cool at the same time.
I never expected him to be standing in front of us.
Wow. Okay. And also just love that you landed Selfridges as your first retailer as well. That's just so cool. Do you have any advice for like an early stage product-based business on getting their first retailer? It sounds like your strategy of having like investing in a trade show was quite a good move in terms of just getting the exposure to the right people.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, like as I said, like when we got back from South America, we did a lot of market research, and I think it is important to understand. So for example, if you know you want to launch into Planet Organic, for example, like understanding what's already out there on their shelves and where you'd fit in, like what's different about you, or why would a customer pick you up over whatever else they have. And that kind of helps you sell your product to the buyer when you do sort of speak to them. But I think like it doesn't have to be a trade show. I know we started by booking a couple of those, but I guess it was one way of us getting that market research. I think if you know that you want to approach a certain buyer, there's always like LinkedIn or going to events where some of them are sort of speaking, or there's events where you can even kind of like do a 5-minute pitch to different buyers and that kind of thing. But I think it's just getting as much of that experience as possible, and not waiting too long, because you don't want to have spent so long perfecting your product, because they will give you feedback which is really constructive. So you want to take that on board and help you perfect your product, as opposed to spending so long perfecting your product that maybe someone else would have come along and done it, or at that stage they may not have space in their shelf. So I guess it's sort of just trying to get out there as soon as possible, whether it's in front of consumers or buyers, and that's that first-hand feedback that is so valuable.
I think that's really, really good advice, and I think from my experience of doing lots of trade shows in past jobs, it does just provide you a really good way to almost perfect your pitch in the sense of like the brand message and what resonates with people, because you've got that instant kind of reaction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember, I think there was an event we went to where we did the pitch to a couple of different buyers, and I think it was like 6 months later that one of them contacted us and said, oh, you know, we're looking for this product, like, do you want to come and come into our offices? And so even if you don't get the final sale or whatever, you know, get the listing at that point, it just builds that relationship, and I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, definitely opens doors.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then, and this is back on the traveling actually, but I did just want to ask you as well, because I've spoken to a lot of people lately who they've been in corporate for maybe about 5 or 6 years. They're starting to feel a little bit burnt out, and they're thinking, some companies as well, some of the big corporates are good enough to offer like sabbaticals as well. What advice would you give to someone in that position in terms of they're thinking about taking a sabbatical or thinking about going traveling for a bit just because they're not really sure what they want to do, but they know that they can't continue doing what they're doing at the moment?
Well, I think I definitely feel that taking that time out and that space will perhaps help you figure out what it is that you want to do. So it definitely allows you to step away and maybe figure a few things out, take some time out. So I don't know if I'm biased, but I definitely say take that opportunity. Because for me, I've always found, and especially coming from a psychology background, that we spend so much of our time in the working world, and you know that influences so much of your wellness, like your home life. And if you're not enjoying it, then you know, you want to be in a role when you're spending that much time that you're doing something that you really love and that you're really passionate about. And if there's something that you are really good at and you enjoy, then you're more likely to excel at it, and you know, it just becomes, how we said, like a business is just part of your life. It's not really, it doesn't feel like a job as such. So I think taking a sabbatical or going traveling, you know, just being in a different environment can maybe put things into perspective, and it could be that you might not change roles or whatever it might be, but at least maybe help formulate a plan of what you'd like to do next.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that when you're in that sort of headspace of feeling a bit burnt out, not sure what you want to do, it's really hard to find the solution because you're in that headspace.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas, like you say, if you take yourself out of the environment somewhere else, then it can just really help kind of like come up with a solution or what it is that you really want to do a bit more clearly in your mind.
Yeah, exactly. And I think traveling is, I mean, especially going somewhere like South America, it's such a different culture. So there's always going to be something new that you're going to learn or you know, appreciate. So it's definitely going to get you to think differently. Or maybe even come up with a solution to what you should do next.
So our advice is basically just go.
Absolutely.
Basically. Okay, amazing. So we're kind of coming up to time, but I loved hearing more about your brand. And I know this is an audio podcast, but we've got some packaging like in front of us with some amazing Superfoodio products in it, and they look amazing.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, it was great to hear more behind the story and everything like that and how you started it. But we end on a quick fire round, if that's all right with you. So first question, what's the best book that you've ever read?
There's one book, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which I always go back to. Yeah, it's a really good one.
Nice.
Which I love that one, yeah.
What do you remember, like, the kind of key takeaways from it, or what resonated with you?
So he has these analogies, and one of them is sort of talking about how we prioritise in life. So he sort of said that you've got your big stones, like say you're going to put all these pebbles in a jar. You've got these big pebbles, which are the main things you should prioritise, like your health and your family life and all the rest. And then all the small pebbles that fit in around it. So it's just putting that perspective when you're kind of worrying about what to do first and how, you know, what you should approach. It just sort of thinking of it in that sort of analogy helps you put everything in perspective.
Yeah, almost like a life framework.
Exactly, but a really simple one that relates to everything.
Okay, interesting. I've definitely heard that one come up a couple of times. Second question. So the name of this podcast is the Well and Wild Podcast. Mm-hmm. And I called it that because I believe that to be well in life, sometimes you need to do some wild things and take some risks. So what is the wildest thing that you've ever done?
So I'd say like the South America trip.
Yeah.
There was definitely some wild moments in there.
Yeah.
I remember one, we went piranha fishing.
Wow.
Which I don't even know why I did it, to be honest. And we didn't really, we ended up crossing a river with the piranhas in there without realizing it.
Oh my God.
It was just, I just think,
what country was this?
This was in Brazil.
Okay.
So we had to cross the river to get to the bank where you do the piranha fishing. It's only when we got to the bank that they said, oh, by the way, there's piranhas
in there. Oh my God.
And the other thing was caimans as well. And then after we'd sort of, you know, done the fishing, they were like, oh, you've got to cross back now. There's no other way.
Oh,
and it was
no.
just like, oh, exactly. It's just the worst thing, and yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I'm not really sure, actually. I'm not really sure about that one, but yeah, no, it was definitely memorable.
Yeah,
let's just put it that way.
That does sound wild. I definitely don't like the thought of going back there when you knew.
I think you can cross one. Yeah, you can cross one.
I think I'd prefer to cross not knowing.
Exactly.
that's a good one. Okay, and what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
If related to business or
yeah, it could be anything, life, business, anything.
I think generally, well, one thing that applies to anything that we're doing right now is just to keep trying, like keep trying your hardest. And if I was to pass that on to someone, like things may not always work out, but I feel like there is always a solution.
Yeah.
I think like my parents or my grandma, like she always used to say that, and I feel like that persistence is something mm-hmm. that's really required. And a bit of resilience when it comes to having your own business. And it just applies to so many things in life.
Yeah.
So it is like, yeah, maybe not having that everything set out in one path, but kind of feeling that you will sort of, you can achieve success, you can kind of overcome any difficulties. That's probably the best advice.
I think that's really interesting, and it probably adds on from your like psychology background as well. But that like, if you put yourself out there and are creating a brand or a business, that there's always going to be an element of doubt that creeps in from time to time,
and
you can't really predict it either. And I think that it's definitely true in the sense that you've just got to keep pushing, rather than quitting just when the self-doubt comes in.
And I guess sometimes I often think to myself like, oh, what's the worst that can happen? Like when you think that way, then you think, oh, actually it's not that bad. Like I remember we're traveling thinking, oh, you know, what if we don't like it, or what if it's really really horrible? And we're just like, we'll just book a flight back. Like, it's not really that bad. So it's just kind of thinking, just taking it as it comes, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. Normally when you weigh it up, the worst case scenario isn't as bad as
there is
awful feeling inside before you actually think about what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, amazing advice. And where can the listeners find you more about Superfoodio, and where can they buy the products?
So superfoodio.com is our website, and we're also on social media like Instagram, Facebook. And in terms of our products, we're stocked in places like Ocado, Whole Foods.
Nice.
Lots of sort of stockists in and around London, Planet Organic.
And they're listed on your website as well,
All on our website, exactly.
Amazing. And I'll add the links into the show notes as well, so they can just directly find it from there as well. But thank you so much, Nirali, for coming on.
That
was such a good conversation.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Please remember to subscribe, and if you enjoyed the episode, I'd be grateful if you could send it on to one friend. This episode was actually the final episode in the first series that I've done of the Well and Wild podcast. Next week, I'm going to be back with the start of series two, which is going to be a slightly different angle, and I'm going to be focusing more on kind of the remote working opportunities that I have come across having moved to Bali and having chatted to multiple different entrepreneurs, because there's such an incredible opportunity to take your work and work remotely and travel the world at the same time, whether that's becoming a freelancer, whether that's getting a remote job for another company, or whether that's starting your own business. I just think there's not enough people tapping into that way of working when there's so many opportunities with today's technology. So I just want to inspire everybody to educate you about what's available. So I'll be bringing on some amazing remote workers, some amazing remote entrepreneurs, and I can't wait to share their stories. So make sure you subscribe so you'll be able to catch series 2 once it's out, and have an amazing week.